This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
The death of Pope Francis has billions wondering who will succeed him and what direction he will take the Catholic Church. That is the Roman Catholic Church. The next pope will be selected during conclave, a secretive gathering of cardinals from all over the world. Several factors are going to contribute to the selection process, including the diversity of thought among the voting cardinals and the current political state across the globe. A professor of theology and religious studies at Villanova University, a Catholic university, an expert on the papacy, all these factors will make it more difficult, he said, than usual to predict how the conclave will vote. So it's really a much more complicated chemistry this time, he said, because there's a very complicated international situation which affects different cardinals, different local churches in different ways. He added that the conclave is known to have its own way of thinking. It means something different for a cardinal from Asia, something from Africa, somebody else from Chicago or Washington or even New York City. So the expert or the interrogator of the expert asks a number of questions. You talk about the complicated political situation worldwide. That includes the U.S. So what role might that play in choosing a new pope? So the expert, Mr. Faglione, said, well, in the last century, it was clear that the Vatican and the United States were working like two parallel empires, one with hard and the other with soft power. Right now, it's much harder to understand if this alliance is still there and what kind of relationship there is because of what's happening between the U.S. government and the Catholic Church domestically, but also internationally. The conclave has its own geopolitical thinking, he said. And by the way, take note of the word geopolitical thinking. He said it's a factor that we did not have in conclaves of the previous 100 years. And that's going to be a pope that it engages politically different. All popes engage politically. U.S. Catholicism is one of the biggest, most influential, and the richest churches in the world, he said. And so there are many different factors that the election of the pope has to take into account. What the conclave and the next pope cannot do is ignore and deny the changing features of global Catholicism, which is much less European, much less white, less North African, and more global South, meaning not necessarily liberal. Do you notice anything unusual or particular about this particular interview? At no time did the expert on the papacy refer to anything spiritual or religious. It was all about politics. We could call this program Papal Politics here today because Tony Blair, the former Prime Minister of England, the UK, who was once the leader of the, or one of the leaders, shall we say, political leaders of the Church of England, went directly to the Pope and converted to Catholicism and then formed an organization, went directly to New York, formed an organization to unite the religions of the world under the papacy. Six religions, he said this statement, religion is the new politics. Religion is the new politics. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to call this program the Papal Prophetic Predicament. The Papal Prophetic Predicament. There are a bunch of prophecies that are involved here as well. We're going to talk about some of those. We're not talking about biblical prophecies necessarily, although there are some that might have import upon the choice at the conclave. On the other hand, there are other prophecies within the Roman Catholic Church itself. So today on Viewpoint, I want to make it plain. Those who are listening, if you happen to be one who has been raised in the the Roman Catholic Church. By the way, I'm using this term very carefully, the Roman Catholic Church, because one of the great declarations of the faith talks about the Holy Catholic Church, but it's not talking about the Roman Catholic Church. It's talking about the Church Universal. And so some, in fact, those who are within the Catholic, the Roman Catholic group, would say, well, yes, the Church Universal is the Roman Catholic Church. But if you talk to the Greek Orthodox Church, or the Armenian Orthodox Church, or the Russian Orthodox Church, or any of the other Orthodox, they would disagree with you wholeheartedly. In fact, they have refused to come under the mothering wings of the Roman Catholic Church and under the papacy. There was a great schism that resulted 1,000 years ago and has never been mended. In fact, Pope John Paul II did everything he could to try to mend that and get these other Orthodox Christian churches to see themselves as part of the Holy Catholic Church, but not the Roman Catholic Church. He tried to get them to join back under the rule and authority of the papacy, and they refused. And that refusal continues to this very day. Now, if you'd like to know more about this in its entirety, you might want to just get a copy of my book, King of the Mountain. King of the Mountain, the Eternal Epic and End Time Battle, for it is said that he who rules the Temple Mount rules the world. And you will find, as we go on with the program today, why that might be a factor here. That it's not about religion per se, it's about politics, power politics as well, with a religious spin on it, to give it a measure of, shall we say, religious or spiritual authority. But at root is politics, because religion is the new politics. And that's why Pope Francis sought to bring the religions together, and he actually went to the Arab nation and was building three monuments, churches, one Muslim, one Catholic, and I can't remember what the other one was, with the idea of, it was a Jewish synagogue, with the idea of uniting these three religions. That was his goal. Now, it appears religious, but in fact, it was motivated politically. The idea was to unite the religions of the world under the governance of the Vatican, ruled by the papacy. Now, to some, this may be all very confusing. So what I want to make clear is, when we talk about the Vatican, when we talk about the papacy, we're not talking about individual people who happen to be Christians, professing Christians, trying to walk with the Lord in righteousness and holiness within the Catholic Church or the Roman Catholic Church. We're not talking about you. We're talking about something very different. We're talking about the papacy and the Vatican. The Vatican being the smallest geopolitical state in the world, but arguably, from some senses, the most powerful, ruled exclusively by the Pontifex Maximus.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Today, it's papacy politics, or the papal prophetic predicament. The papal prophetic predicament. And there's a predicament. As these cardinals gather together, the largest group of cardinals under the age of 80 in a very long time, perhaps in history, that are going to make the determination as to a new pope. a replacement vicar of Christ. Now, can Christ be replaced? Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, that no man will come to the Father by me, but by me. So therefore, can Christ be replaced with a substitute? Well, that's what vicar of Christ actually means. It means a substitute. One standing in the place of Christ instead of Christ. Now, there are implications for that, if you allow yourself to really think about them. And we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about it here today, but you might want to read my book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic and End Time Battle, because it will help you to understand the greater picture. You might also get a copy of my book, Antichrist, How to Discern the Coming Imposter, and that will help you to work through some of the issues that we'll bring up here today on Viewpoint. They're all on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. By the way, don't try to go to Amazon to get King of the Mountain. They don't have any. The person that interviewed me for 4 hours in the last 4 days, 4 hours concerning that book, got the last book. The last book at Amazon. We have all the rest of the books at Save America Ministries, where you can obtain them, $15. We'll put the book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. By the way, the book, King of the Mountain, is, I think, our second highest selling book ever. It's a fascinating, fascinating book. There's a reason why a Jewish talk show host interviewed me for 7 hours. That is an hour a day, 1 week after the other, because he said this book is so vast in its implications that we just cannot cover it in less time. So it's something that you might want to avail yourself of. But as we move forward here today, you might wonder why the title, The Papal Prophetic Predicament. Well, we begin to look at that here. This comes from Catholic.com. Saint Malachy, or Malachy's prophecy, and Pope Francis. You may have heard of Saint Malachy, but perhaps not for his holy life. He's a great saint, born in Ireland in 1094 and became the bishop there in 1032 AD. On the other hand, you probably have heard of the papal prophecies attributed to Malachy, a list of 112 Roman pontiffs and anti-popes. Because of support in some Catholic circles, the countdown to the final pope on the list over the last century, along with the church's prophesied final persecution, including the destruction of Rome, the list has garnered media coverage during papal interregiums, including here at Catholic Answers when Pope Benedict XVI resigned in February of 2013. After all, of the 112 popes listed in Malachy's prophecy, Pope Francis is the 112th. In other words, the last pope mentioned. So, Catholic.com says, if the reported private revelations were true from Malachy's prophecy, we would be on the doorstep of the second coming, given the recent death of Pope Francis. Although we must always be ready for the Lord's return or to face him sooner than that when we die, the end does not appear to be imminent, at least based on the credibility of the prophecies attributed to Saint Malachy. So then it talks about various dubious origins and so on. And the reality is that this prophecy of Saint Malachy concludes with Saint Pope Francis as the last pope, the last pope. So what if indeed this conclave is to select another pope to follow St. Francis or Pope Francis, then what are they going to be looking for? A politician rather than a pope? A king? What are they going to be looking for? A dictator? It's fascinating because if indeed Malachi's prophecy is anywhere near true, we would be at the end of the road. And the end of the road doesn't look pretty under the prophecy. Another article from the New York Post talks about Pope Francis' successor revealed in ancient prophecy plucked from Vatican archives. A selection of church leaders will now vote to choose the next command, but some claim to already know who will be picked. Interesting. Some claim to know who already will be picked. The prophecy of the popes from Malachi is a series of cryptic Latin phrases in the document that have been interpreted for describing the lineup of church leaders, starting with Celestine II in 1143 and ending with Peter the Roman in 2027. Nostradamus, a French astrologist and soothsayer from the 16th century, also said to have predicted that Peter the Roman will take over. Well, that sent believers into a fervor, noting that the nine front runners set to succeed Pope Francis, three are named Peter. The next pope will be chosen by a conclave consisting of 120 cardinals out of the 138 princes of the church who are under 80 and will gather at the Vatican to pick his replacement. And we don't have to go into all the great details, what's going to happen inside the Sistine Chapel and so on. But the College of Cardinals is going to convene, they say, starting May 7th. White smoke will be sent from the Sistine Chapel ceiling to announce that a new pope has been elected. Four daily ballots will be held until a successor is picked. After 30 ballots, the top two candidates will be the only ones allowed. Whoever gets a two-thirds majority will become the next pontiff. Sounds totally political, doesn't it? Where is the spiritual input? It doesn't seem to exist. Nowhere in the considerations or the chat is there any spiritual consideration. The eeriest prediction pulled from the Nostradamus policy claims that the judgment day, the second coming of Christ, when all people living and dead will learn their eternal fate, is very near. While several religions believe their own theory about the fateful ending, Christians think their day is coming soon. And since the prophecy of the popes ends with Peter the Roman in 2027, many faithful have interpreted it to be a sign of the end times. St. Malachi is credited with creating the prophecy of the popes. So we have two now, Nostradamus and Malachi, and they both say that Peter the Roman will be the last pope, who will preside over the church during the time of great turmoil, culminating, listen to this, culminating in the destruction of Rome and the end of the papacy. Culminating in the destruction of Rome and the end of the papacy. Now, I want you to think about this. If you were to go back to the book of Revelation, chapter 17, you would find a talk about a great harlot. A mystery woman. And the woman sits on seven hills, seven mountains or seven hills. There's only one city in the world that is noted for sitting on seven hills, and that's Rome. It talks about how it gives the colors of the leaders, scarlet and crimson or red. It talks about the golden chalice. It talks about the mothering effect of this harlot, the great harlot, the mystery harlot, that will gather the peoples of the planet under her mothering wings. That's what a harlot does, a mother harlot. Then at the end of the chapter, Revelation chapter 17, it says that this harlot that has been riding the beast or the beast empire, the final global world government into power, once that is achieved, the secular power will destroy the purported spiritual leadership that got it into power. And when that happens, it says that that great city will be burned. Now, I'm not going to go into great detail with you here anymore. I want you to go back and read Revelation 17 yourself. It's very important. Now, I am not saying, and I want to make this very clear, I am not saying that there is going to be, that this final, or this person who is selected, whoever it might be, by the conclave, will be the final pope. I'm not saying that. I have no biblical authority to say that. That's based upon two prophecies within or surrounding the Roman Catholic Church. One by a saint within the Roman Catholic Church, Saint Malachy. Beyond that, what we have to look at is what the Bible has to say, not about who that successor will be, but what the conditions will be of that institution and why those conditions will be there and for what purpose. And Revelation 17 makes it very clear. The purpose is that the quasi-religious authority is going to ride the secular beast empire into power. In fact, it's going to help facilitate the secular beast empire into power. Why? Because it is well understood by politicians that unless you have a strong, seemingly religious component, you cannot get the full attention and agreement of the masses of the people. So, the papacy for the past, with Pope John Paul II, then Benedict XVI, then Francis, every single one of them have called for a new world order. Every one of them. Pope Francis, even the more so. You'll find about the citations for that in my book, King of the Mountain. You'll also find it in the book, Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. It's not a mystery. The woman is a mystery, but how it plays out is not mysterious. It's very real, and we're seeing it happen as we speak. Because the papacy is being used and has for the past 50 years, 60 years, to choreograph the world under the mothering wings of the papacy or Vatican in order to unify the world for a one world order. That's the express goal. The popes have declared it. And all the citations are right there in the book, King of the Mountain, and also in the book, Antichrist. King of the Mountain is available to you for $15 on our website, Antichrist for $22. Actually, for $20, it's a $22 book. If you buy both of them, if they're not duplicative, you buy both of them, there's only $6 postage and mailing for the first book and $2 for the second. I'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismier and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. Today we're talking about the papal prophetic predicament. It's a predicament because the cardinals that are responsible in this conclave coming up on May 7th have hovering over them the knowledge of the news media all over the world that are bringing these things up concerning the prophecy of St. Malachi and Nostradamus, saying, where does this fit? Is there any reality to this? So what will the members of the conclave do? Some might think, well, these cardinals are coming together clad in red. They're coming together to find the best spiritual leader to head the Roman Catholic Church. I disagree. That's not what their primary purpose is. It's not even mentioned in most of the discussions. Their primary purpose is political. It's about how to steer the Roman Catholic Church under the Vatican and papal authority into global dominance to usher in the largest group of people under the mothering wings of the Roman Catholic Church. It's very simple. The predicament is they have to appear spiritual, but that's not the primary motivation. If that were the primary motivation, then why would they go back and forth and consider, well, we want a liberal here, we want a conservative here, we want to shift from a liberal to a conservative and so on? No, those are political issues. That's where the thinking is. Political thinking. So, St. Malachi is credited with creating the prophecy of the popes, writing 112 mysterious phrases about the papal progression, culminating with number 112. 112 is Pope Francis. He's dead now. According to the final entry surrounding Peter the Roman, the last pope will preside over the church during the time of great turmoil, culminating in the destruction of Rome and the end of the papacy. Sounds just like the last few verses of Revelation 17. Fascinating. So, let me speak primarily at the moment to my Roman Catholic listeners, of which there are many, always have been. In fact, one party once called me and said, Chuck, you're the best Catholic I know, other than your ideas about Mary. You're the best Catholic I know. Well, I don't know exactly what the person knew about that, but believed that the standards that we held here on this program and communicate are consistent in general with so much that the Catholic Church purported to believe. In fact, many, many within the Roman Catholic Church who have grown up there or continue to be there are upset and have been upset with what Pope Francis has done to liberalize And by liberalize, I mean divert from the authority of Scripture to try to please the people according to the cultural mandates around the world. That's what he did. He compromised continually. Why? Because he wanted to curry the favor with the maximum number of people, even welcoming people into the church that otherwise would have been excommunicated from fellowship if they previously had committed the offenses such as the practice of homosexuality, transgenderism, and those things, and even divorce and remarriage. I know that's hard for some of you to receive, but it's true. So we're looking at a very interesting moment. A very interesting moment indeed. I want to make sure that those of you who are have been raised in the Catholic, the Roman Catholic Church, we're very explicit to call it the Roman Catholic Church, because technically the entire body of Christian believers is called the Church Universal or the Holy Catholic Church, not the Roman Catholic Church. The Church Universal. The Roman Catholic Church under the papacy claims to be the Church Universal, claims to have complete authority and sequential authority as Pope all the way from Peter. But in case you have forgotten, let me remind you how even that began. In the book of in the scriptures, Jesus had a conversation with his disciples, and he wanted to find out from their viewpoint who people were saying that he was. And so they responded, well, some say you're Elijah, some say you're this, some say you're this. And so Jesus said, okay, but who do you say that I am? So they were his disciples. They were the ones that have been following him now for almost 3 years, 2.5 years or whatever. But who do you say that I am? And so Peter, being the hyperventilated mouth that he was, you know, the same guy that just very quickly said that he wouldn't deny Jesus. Even if everybody did, he wouldn't deny Jesus, and then proceeded to deny him 3 times. He's also the guy, when Jesus was teaching his disciples about how he was going to have to be crucified and would rise again, Peter said, oh, no, not you, Lord, not you. And Jesus turned to him and said, get thee behind me, Satan. You do not savor the things that be of God, but of men. So now Peter is speaking up again when Jesus asked the question, who do men say that I am? And Jesus, Peter jumps immediately to preempt all the other disciples, and he says this, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. It was a true statement. So Jesus recognized that as a true statement, and here's what he said. Listen carefully, here's what he said. You are Cephas, that's Peter, Cephas meaning a rock, but upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Jesus was not saying that Peter was the rock. He was using that as a, like a euphemism, a comparison. He said, okay, you are called Cephas, a rock. But upon this rock, now what rock is he talking about? He's talking about the rock of the revelation that Jesus is the Son of God, the Savior of the world, the Messiah, the Son of God, the Christ. That's the rock that Jesus was talking about. Not a person, but the revelation, the fact, the recognition that he is the Christ, the Son of God. the one we've been waiting for. The Roman Catholic Church decided it was Peter. You can decide whatever you want, but I don't believe it's true. Peter was just the one who gave the voice, but Jesus didn't affirm that as the rock. He affirmed the rock of revelation. That is, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Upon that rock, I will build my church. Why would Jesus want to build his church upon a rock that three times denied him, that another time told him he wasn't going to go to the cross, that that was not the right thing to do, and Jesus had to call him Satan, get thee behind me, Satan. Why would Jesus build the church, his church, upon that? No. Peter was a fine guy, but he was not the one upon whom the church was to be built. It was to be built upon the revelation that Jesus is the Messiah, the Christ, the Christos, the Yeshua HaMashiach, the Holy One of Israel, the Savior of the world. Now, you can think about that. You can even argue about it. Arguing doesn't do any good, because a person convinced against their will be of the same opinion still. But I've given you what I think is the truth on this issue. And if it is the truth, then everything that the Roman Catholic Church is predicated upon in terms of its leadership and its future is false. Because it's about the papacy. Now, just so that you understand, very quickly, the Roman Empire was ruled by somebody called the Pontifex Maximus. Pontifex Maximus. It means the maximum pontiff, or the one who is ruler of both civil and religious matters. In other words, the blending of religion and politics for Rome. That's why the Roman emperors were treated as deity. So then, gradually, as the Roman Catholic Church developed based upon this idea that Peter was the Pope, the first Pope, or the first Bishop of Rome, gradually over time, they adopted exactly the same terminology that the Roman Empire used. The Pope now became the Pontifex Maximus. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for a greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. We're dealing with the Pope. The post-passing of Pope Francis, the conclave set to convene on May 7th, the future of the Roman Catholic Church. Notice I said the Roman Catholic Church, not the Catholic Church, because the Roman Catholic Church means the Church Universal. not the papacy, not the Vatican. It has nothing to do with the papacy of the Vatican. It has to do with the universal church of Jesus Christ on earth. So, we're now looking at a situation where, historically, the Roman emperor, who was called the Pontifex Maximus, his authority, his power, was transferred to the Bishop of Rome in the early years of the church, the Christian church. Not the Roman Catholic Church, but the church that developed its bishopry and ultimately the papacy. Interestingly, the very term Pontifex Maximus that was used to describe the identity of the Roman emperors now was transferred to the Bishop of Rome, i.e. the Pope. Not only that, but almost all the practices of the Roman Empire and its government were picked up and transferred into the Roman Catholic Church, including the Roman Curia, including the vestures. And why would the Pope, when he is inaugurated, so to speak, why would he be crowned with a triple crown that names him King of Kings and Lord of the World? Why would that be? Does he really believe that he is Christ in the flesh? That Jesus is not the Lord of all, but that he now is? And is that what this enclave or conclave is supposed to be determining, who the next Lord of the World is going to be? Who the next King of Kings is going to be? Really? So people really need to start thinking about these things. And what's fascinating is, if you listen to the news media, whether, I don't care whether it's Fox News, Newsmax, any of the others, conservative news and liberal news, it doesn't matter. 80 to 90% of the voices there are all Roman Catholic. So what you get when you listen is a viewpoint that is completely skewed to Roman Catholicism, not to general Christian belief, but to Roman Catholicism. Now, interestingly, the Russian Orthodox Church believes that they are the true Rome, that they're the true Catholic Church, not Roman Catholic Church, that they're the true bearers or carriers of the true Christian faith, and here's that how that developed. There was a lot in the early years of the church. I'm talking about up until, say, the Middle Ages, early Middle Ages. People became gradually disgusted with the Roman Catholic Church because it was corrupt. Its theology was corrupt. Its popes were corrupt to the max. And they became disgusted. So there was a shift of authority to the east in Constantinople. The Byzantine or Byzantine Catholic Church became the most respected, holding on to the faith once delivered to the saints. But then, several hundred years later, the Muslims came in and destroyed Constantinople. And in that process, the Christians in Constantinople fled to Moscow, Russia. They fled to Moscow. By 1500s, a fellow by the name of Philofi there in Russia gave a prophecy. And here's what he said. Moscow or Russia is the third Rome, and there will never be another. In other words, their belief is that the true heritage of the Christian church ultimately landed in Moscow and Russia. Now you can better understand why, within the Russian Orthodox Church, there is a kind of merger there with Vladimir Putin and his regime, and they actually believe that Russia is ordained to lead the world into the second coming of Jesus Christ. Now, you can have whatever issue you want with that. You can disagree to the max. It doesn't matter. That's their belief. That's their viewpoint. And viewpoint determines destiny. And, of course, they act upon the viewpoint. Now, very quickly, friends, this now becomes a matter for Israel as well. We don't have time to go into this as much as I would like right now, but now from Israel National News comes this headline. Israel must campaign the Vatican to return temple vessels. It's a desecration, a mockery of Jewish sovereignty that the Vatican is holding as a Gentile group, holding the sacred vessels of the temple. The menorah, the golden menorah, the holy implements for divine service. They're the very heartbeat of the Jewish people, says this article. These treasures are languishing in the Vatican's vaults. They're not relics to be bartered or forgotten, but the very soul of our nation, stolen by Rome's imperial hand. Yet for reasons that defy comprehension, this issue of utmost importance has been ignored except for sporadic campaigns, except for now. The vessel's retrieval is not merely a political act, but a spiritual imperative, they say, a step toward cosmic rectification. Today, as the papacy shifts and the world trembles, the moment is ripe to demand their return. These artifacts transcend history or archaeology. Their captivity in Gentile hands is a desecration, a mockery of Jewish sovereignty. The menorah carried through Rome's Arch of Titus was not just booty, it was a deliberate attempt to extinguish the light of the Jewish people, to leave it in the Vatican, to acquiesce to national humiliation. It must be returned. All of this is no secret, they said. It's documented. The Arch of Titus, standing as a monument to our suffering, depicts the menorah carried off as a plunder after the temple's desecration in 70 AD. Josephus records that Vespasian claimed these sacred vessels for Rome, parading them as trophies of conquest. And it's time to get them back. Now, this is very interesting, friends, because what you probably do not know is that this is a manifestation of a spiritual and political tension that is ongoing with the papacy and the Vatican. To the point where, if you read my book, King of the Mountain, you will discover that the Vatican has been doing everything possible for the past 20 years to gain control over every spiritual site in Israel where Jesus tread, including dominion over the Temple Mount. And the Vatican, through its papacy, has declared that Rome intends to, that the Roman Catholic Church under the Vatican and the papacy intends to rule the world from Jerusalem, not the Vatican. Do you think this might just be revealing that we're right there on the cusp of the end of the age? Indeed, it does. And of course, if the Temple Mount, and the temple is a big deal, which it is, God himself called it his holy hill. He said, I have set my son, right there in Psalm 2, he says, I have set my son to rule on my holy mountain, my holy hill. So you guys, you leaders of the world, better get in line, or it's not going to go so well for you. You can read it right there in Psalm 2. It's a short little psalm. It's powerful. So the world is now moving quickly to try to put themselves in position to be king of the mountain, the Temple Mount, the Holy Mount of God, just as Satan himself said he would do from the heavenly mount over 6,000 years ago when he said in his classic envy, I will ascend to the heights of the north. I will be like the Most High God. I want you to think about that when it comes to language such that the papacy claims to be the one sitting as Jesus Christ on the earth and will sit on the Temple Mount to rule the world. Really? That's the goal. That's the declared goal of the papacy, my friend. You might want to consider the players now. It's not just the Vatican. It's a new world, Western one world order that the Vatican seeks to commandeer under a religious rubric. It's also the Muslim world that seeks to become king of the mountain. They have also declared they're going to rule and reign from the Temple Mount. Who else is going to make that claim? This is what's happening, my friends, right in front of your eyes and mine. So I say to you, people, get ready. Jesus, the true head of the church, is coming. And he's going to judge the world in righteousness. He's not coming with a little halo on his head, speaking sweet nothings. He did that in some respects when he came the first time to save people from their sins. The next time he's coming to judge the world in and for its sins, starting at the house of God. Judgment will begin at the house of God. Now, do you think this might be relevant? It's more relevant than most people want, but we need to understand it. So you've been given notice, shall we say, due process, to use it in lawyer's terms, due process that indeed this is what's happening, why it's happening, and how it is happening. Can't give you the exact details of who ultimately is going to be selected. Will it be the final pope? Will it even be somebody called a pope? I don't know. And you don't know either. But we do know that things are moving very rapidly in the direction of the culmination of all things. Get a copy of the book, King of the Mountain, also Antichrist. The one is $15, the other's $20, and $6 postage and handling for one book. If you get two books, add another $2 for postage and handling. Go to the website, saveus.org, get your copy, write to us, call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA, and seriously consider becoming a partner, friends. It's becoming very, very difficult to keep things going. And right after this program, another station is calling to see if we can't come on. Will you help us?
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.